Hello, listeners, and welcome back to Welcome to the Podcast. This week, we're excited to bring you the conclusion of our cousin chat with Tim Grierson. Last week, we covered side A, and this week, we're talking side B. So if you haven't heard the first part of this conversation, definitely go back and check that out. And lastly, we didn't get to this in our proper recording, but I just want to shout this out. If you'd like to follow Tim Grierson, you can find him on Instagram with the handle at Tim Grierson. That's TimGrierson. Okay, let's get into it. Here's side B of Cousin. Okay, we are in the back half of the album now, which for me, spoiler alert, Sunlight Ends through the end of this album is for me when this album started to resonate a little bit more. But track six, we have A Bowl and a Pudding. So let's give that a listen here.
Not saying anything, not saying anything. Says a lot.
To me, A Bowl and a Pudding could almost be a companion track to Sunlight Ends. We were just talking about Sunlight Ends is kind of like a couple realizing that maybe they're not destined to be together. They're lost. And Bowl and a Pudding is kind of the realization that that relationship is going to have to end. The one you love is not me. It's kind of like continues this dreamy, kind of melancholic tone with like kind of this Nick Drake-esque finger picking. But to me, it seemed like maybe Sunlight Ends and Bowl and a Pudding were in conversation with each other. And maybe that wasn't what was intended, but that's just something that I took from this track.
Yeah, I think the idea that they're in conversation is probably pretty dead on. They feel like it. They're next to each other on the album. So it definitely feels that way. I like this song partly because, and I mean this sincerely, not glibly, I really like the title because it doesn't mean anything obvious in terms of, it's almost like a painting with a title that doesn't match what you're looking at, and it makes you wonder what they have in common.
Yes.
And I would agree that this song feels, if I was unsure with the last song in terms of its intention, this song seems more clear about what's going on. Bad things are happening. Things are falling apart. My only reservation, the only reason why I don't like this song as much as my top three, for instance, is it feels, experimental is a word I think we all kind of hate and are trying not to use in terms of talking about Wilco, but it feels the most like a sonic exercise as opposed to the other songs we've talked about that really kind of musically worked for us. This one feels more, a doodle is not right and isn't fair and isn't, it's too, again, reductive a way to describe it, but it feels more like a fragment of a song, and it doesn't hold up as strong as a song itself. It almost feels, though it's a regular song length, it almost feels like an interlude to whatever the next song is going to be to a certain extent. And so while I don't dislike the song at all and find it really, really beautiful and pretty and melodic, it always feels a little slight in a way that even some of the other songs that might be slight in a certain way feel substantial. This one feels more like a fragment of an idea, both lyrically and musically. And so while I like it, I find myself not tuning in as strongly as some of the other songs. So in some ways, it's an interesting way to start side two, because it's almost like bringing us back into the story and giving us like a little sketch, a snapshot of something that is happening. And with that title, A Bowl and a Pudding, like, I don't know, maybe I'm missing something obvious in terms of what that title is about. And maybe you guys are like, Tim, it's about, yeah, I don't know if Tweety's talked about that title, Lance, if he's said anything, but it's evocative, but it doesn't capture me maybe as much as my favorite songs off this album do.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. It does feel incomplete. And I think that's one of the reasons that I like it, that it does feel, it almost does feel like a draft. And it's, is it done? And almost like when the song's ending comes, every time I'm always thinking, oh, okay, the song's over. I do like that about it. I think that it doesn't sound like any other song on the album. To me, it's more acoustic. You know, granted, 10 Dead is acoustic. It's unique for Cousin. Maybe it would belong on Ode to Joy really well, but I like that it's kind of strange. Morgan, you said it sounds like Nick Drake. I agree. Rolling Stone said it has a dubby Nick Drake fever dream vibe to it. To me, when the bass and the drums come in, it almost sounds like the Beatles to me. I think lyrically, it's some of the most boom, like get that tattooed on you. Never, not saying anything says a lot. Not saying anything says enough. Woo! In this moment, I'm like, I have a possible interpretation of the title. I wonder if it's like a couple sitting down to have like, we're going to talk about the relationship. Is this thing working? And you've got one person that wants it to work, and maybe they get something to eat, and maybe they get a pudding, and the other person, they're done. They don't get anything. They just have their bowl, and they're also not saying a lot, which ends up saying a lot. So I don't know. I don't know if that's what he's going for, but
no, that's really interesting. My interpretation was not as thought through as that. Mine was like, it almost feels like just a domestic scene,
a still life.
Yeah, exactly. Like a still life. That was as close as I could get to kind of. I'm going to be really mad if someone's like, "It's this." Don't you realize it's this?
And like, damn it!
those three dummies talked for 20 minutes and could not figure out the most. It's the bane of all podcast hosts and guests is realizing that 400 people are listening to you at the same moment, yelling at you, going, "Dummy, it's this." It's this.
You didn't know it was. Yeah.
It's like, oh, now I realize it. But I mean, the lyrics again. I'm probably overanalyzing in terms of their marriage. I'll say this instead. I think that one of the things I find fascinating about when Jeff Tweedy writes love songs is they are often about the inability to communicate, which is interesting in a song because a song is all about communicating, but it is often about the communication is just not lined up right. There's something, either someone's saying something or not saying something, or they're thinking something and they're wondering what the other person is thinking. That seems to be, you know, we talk about how much I like Sky Blue Sky, you know, it's like, one of those songs, the narrator is sitting on a couch where the other person is sitting when they're there thinking about the other person. There's this idea that we can't quite align. I can't quite make this what I'm thinking and what you're thinking and what we feel, which I think is, you know, it's a cliche in relationships, but it's entirely true that communication is like the most important thing. And I think that's what I respond to. Is that I think he is very honest about that over and over and over again in his work, is this thing of like, maybe it's hard to write a new Wilco song that's really different, but that theme feels kind of inexhaustible about we can't get this thing to exactly align, even though there's a lot of love here.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? How do we make that work? I find that very interesting. Yeah.
I've got to throw a quote in because it's been 2 minutes since I've used one. No, this is from that. This is from a Paste magazine. Paste featured them as the cover artist, if you will. And it's, you're right, Tim, like so much of Wilco music is about communication. I mean, he talks about it all the time, but this is a quote that Jeff Tweedy had. He said, "I have a really sincere desire for there to be a connection and to communicate. In my mind, one of the elements that you have to use in communication is surprise. It's one of the elements of poetry. It's one of the elements of art. if everything unfolds in the way that you expect it to unfold, you tune out. You become very bored. I become bored as a listener, as a reader, if I'm not having the rug pulled out from me time to time. I think it's just better that way. I think art is better that way, to have to trust that you're going to come to your audience in a way that treats them with respect. Like they're going to be willing to invest in it. You assume that that's a desire. So it's just interesting that he's wanting to pull out the rug with communication, but he's still doing that thing of trying to say something while also not saying it too, you know, on the nose.
I mean, it's interesting because I think from our last conversation, I mean, one of the reasons why I like Sky Blue Sky so much is there is a directness in that album that I really respond to. And I still respond to that. There is not that it was willfully obscure before that, but there's something about that album where it's just, there's such a directness, such a candidness in both the music and the lyrics that I just find really powerful. And as much as I've liked albums before or since, it's never been quite the same in terms of just whatever that moment was that he captured in his life or in terms of where he was, his relationships, whatever it was. That was a pretty unique moment. And I don't feel like anything since then has been quite to that level, though I think a lot of the albums have pursued those themes ever since. This idea of writing love songs in complicated, off-angle kinds of ways. Yeah.
All right, folks, let's move on to track number 7, which is the title track, Cousin. Let's give that a listen. Okay, so before we get into this track, I just want to call out, you know, the liner notes aren't super specific for each track, but it gives Kate LeVon credit for additional bass, piano, synthesizer, and backing vocals. And then also Spencer Tweedy gets a credit for additional percussion and backing vocals as well. So I kind of wish we knew what tracks Kate LeVon or Spencer Tweedy are featured on, because in Cousin, I think I'm hearing maybe Kate LeVon sing, like she's double tracked with Tweedy, but it's mixed pretty low, so I'm not 100% sure. So maybe some listeners could do some sleuthing and figure that out for us. But when I heard Cousin as the second single, I was a little bit more excited about the direction of this album, because it's a little off kilter. It didn't sound like traditional Wilco. It sounded, again, to use that word, which we're trying not to use, experimental. It had a little bit more energy and excitement behind it, in my opinion.
Yep.
And Lance, I think you called this out one of the first times you listened to it, but I love the way this song ends. It's kind of weirdly chipper, but kind of like a lot of these songs, kind of has this like unease to it, maybe. And then at the end, we kind of hear this, it sounds like maybe like an affected bell, maybe, like a moaning animal of some sort. It kind of has this creepy sonic ending that I think is really interesting. So that's all without getting into the lyrics here, but musically, I think Cousin was an exciting second single to hear. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, what's very funny is that I, as a critic, I always hate when someone's like, I just don't get it. because it's your job. Your job is to get and understand it. If you don't like it, figure it out. I confess that this is the one track on the album I have never been able to entirely wrap my head around. I feel like it is very much a whole Love era song in certain ways. Like it has sort of a full band sound and some of the brightness that's on Whole Love. But it has, it's catchy. There's no question it's catchy. But whether it's the lyrics, which also feel somewhat Wilco-y in a familiar way, you know, Jeff Tweedy basically singing things about dying or crying, or that it doesn't feel as special as other songs on here. I have to say, when I heard this as the second single, it actually made my heart sink a little bit, because I thought, oh, this actually feels more... I listened to a lot of Whole Love while listening to this album too, because I'm also a fan of that one. And the more kind of up-tempo, for lack of a better word, peppy songs on this album, I think that they're better on Whole Love. I respond to them more on this. So again, it's not a song I dislike, but it's always... it always just feels like an afterthought, not in terms of the album, but in terms of how I think about this album, which I find hilarious, because this is the title track, and often you think the title track is in some ways more important. But even lyrically, this idea about, you know, I'm your cousin, doesn't entirely connect with me. I may be missing the boat on this. I'm looking to you two guys in terms of things I am just not catching on this song.
Yeah, when I first heard it, I was excited because it did sound weird, and it sounded like, oh, okay. So this is a little more out there than Evicted was. It's a little more straightforward. It does sound like Wilco, but it's different than anything I've heard. I relate to him. I don't connect a lot with this song. There's a lot of songs where I'm like, I'm grateful that they're in the Wilco catalog. I would say Cousin is one. You're talking Whole Love. I'm thinking about a song like Standing O.
Right.
You know, really, really interesting track, upbeat, fun. I never find myself like, I'm going to put Standing O on. I'm a little bit indifferent to it, even though I appreciate it existing. So yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I don't feel a strong emotional attachment to this song. I really, really, really do like the way that it gets creepy at the end and it becomes kind of unhinged. I can imagine that being really cool live.
Totally, yeah.
To get that vibe of like, what's happening? In terms of what is it about, he also was asked about this in that Pace magazine interview. And he said he was looking for a word that he says could absorb anybody's interpretation of the record. He said he wanted like a hollowed out word that's neutral, that has a nice sound to it. And he said, kind of in the way that like a band name stops meaning the words, like the Rolling Stones, over time it just absorbs the impression that your work has made. So I kind of get what he's saying there, but I feel like my understanding of Cousin, what he was going for, was like that slight connection you feel, but mainly like you're on the outside looking in, like, and it makes me wonder, you know, these lyrics where he says, walking around an empty grave. Oh, we're the dirt you save to fill an empty grave. I don't know. I'm kind of wondering if he's connecting with this idea of like, we become dust, and then there's a body there that's someone different than me. But then if I'm going to become dust, then I'm kind of absorbed into the grave. I don't know. Maybe I'm going way out of left field there, but it's an interesting existential thing to ponder.
I think for me, it's the only song on the album that it's not a fun, fascinating mystery to unravel what the lyrics are about. They feel to me opaque in a way where I can't quite grasp it. And it feels inscrutable in a way that doesn't draw me in to the mystery. It feels more like I don't quite get this. And then maybe a failing on my own part that I'm not hooking into the deeper meaning, but why I was sort of curious to talk to you two guys about this song, because I'm always just at a loss when I hear this song. It's catchy, it's melodic, it's fun to listen to, but emotionally I just, it kind of keeps me at arm's length, is how I would put it. Yeah.
I wonder, as a songwriter, like, are there songs that Tweedy decides, like, you know what, I'm not going to necessarily write in a way that's going to invite other opinions in. I'm just going to write something that only I'm going to understand. And maybe that's okay.
Yeah, it's a totally fair question where it's like, I know what this means. I'm expressing what I want to express. If you don't get it, Tim, that's not really my problem. And that's a very fair point to make when you're an artist doing stuff, is like, is it his responsibility to make these things clear enough? But if it makes sense to him, that's kind of all that matters. And just speaking as a critic, that's one of the always the fascinating things. You have to be honest and say something doesn't work for you and explain why, while in the back of your head acknowledging, yeah, but they should do what they want to do. It's my job to say if I think it works or not, but they don't have to care at all if I don't understand what the song Cousin is about.
Yeah.
Jeff does. That's probably all that matters. Yeah.
Well, I kind of wonder if he does. Like the way that we've talked about, the way he writes songs, right, where he's trying to get beneath his ego and he's trying to get to that subconscious level. Like, I kind of wonder if there's parts of this where he doesn't fully know what the song is about. And maybe with time,
yeah,
as he sings it and plays it night after night, it'll mean that seems to be the way that he's talked about a song like I Am Trying to Break Your Heart, that it throughout the years, I think he's forgotten kind of like what it originally was about, but it's kind of morphed into this thing. So maybe Cousin is an example.
Yeah,
of that.
Maybe.
Yeah. And we talked about Via Chicago on our last episode. And I think the quote was something like, he surprised himself with the lyrics. I thought about killing you again last night. And it like evoked an emotion in him that he just kind of ran with, but he didn't necessarily understand maybe what it was about.
Yeah. And often that can be whatever type of medium you're working in, to not entirely understand and work from the subconscious and just sort of follow. That can be really fascinating and rewarding, because if you don't understand it as an artist, but it's something that you're drawn to, maybe there's something rich there that you haven't explored before. And also maybe your audience will respond to it too.
All right, we're in our last three tracks here on Cousin. I'm excited to talk about track number 8, because it is one of my favorite songs on the album, and that is Pittsburgh. We'll give that a listen.
Yeah, so it's one of my favorites. Morgan's one of your favorites as well. And I talked earlier about songs being really great sometimes when they're 3/4 finished. This, to me, is the song I'm talking about when I say that. Because in terms of other things I'm just a fan of in music, is short stories as songs where you get the basic plot line, or even not even a plot line, but just scenes from it. Maybe not even this whole story, but the scenes are enough that they feel like they connect what the whole story is. One of my favorites, in terms of an example of this, is a Vampire Weekend song. Is it Hannah Hunt? Is that the name of that song?
Oh, I love that song.
I'm a huge fan of that song. And one of the reasons why I love it is I listen to it all the time because I keep thinking I will be able to understand the story completely. And you never do, but you do. You do understand the story. It's about a couple that go across the country and something happens on the West Coast and it falls apart. And that's the story. But there are all these little things you don't know inside of it. And what I love about Pittsburgh is that, what is that song about? Apparently they're in Pittsburgh, but maybe not. And they're probably at an airport because the TSA is mentioned. But this song is a song I think is pretty easy to interpret that there is something. It's not just a relationship that's going bad. It just feels like a life is going bad. I'm also a sucker for songs about being in airports. There is a Fountains of Wayne song. There's a couple of Fountains of Wayne songs about being in airports. One, I'm going to forget the name of it, but it's off of Traffic and Weather, where two people are waiting in baggage claim, and their whole relationship basically plays out while waiting in baggage claim. I think there's something that is existentially despairing about airports, and maybe that's just me bringing my own thing into it, but I think there's something, there is a feeling of dislocation, whether you're coming home or going someplace. The airports are places in general we do not like. We like going places and we like coming home, but an airport is a way station that you do not enjoy. Presumably, they're taking off at the beginning because they're going through TSA. It's hard to know for sure, but there are so many little fragments in this song about a life that's just unhappy. If you love the rain because it turns shit into a rose, you're not a happy person in that moment. You're not. And if you overhear the TSA going through your clothes as I wait for her, there's just,
yeah.
We talked about poetry a little bit, and Jeff Twee, we did some quotes about poetry from him. I don't like saying, well, this song is like a poem, because, you know, lyrics are poetry, basically. But there's a skeletal nature about this that very much makes me think of poetry in the best way, because it is all the words that have been taken out of the poem that aren't there that you can feel. They're so, so, so evocative. And just that idea at the end about emptying his suitcase in the street in the rain, why is he doing that? What has happened? Something not good has clearly happened, but something has clearly happened. And then him saying, I'm a flag where the wind won't blow. I am a kid that never grows. It's like you can have 1,000 interpretations of what could be happening in this song, but they all point to, if it was an 8-ball, it would say all signs point to bad. And I think the music is really beautiful. And you guys have both talked about songs that don't feel like Wilco. This is the song that doesn't feel like Wilco to me. And it feels, though you can make comparisons to other Wilco songs, it's the one that feels, I hate art pop as a term, but it feels arty and sonically ambitious in a way that feels entirely wedded to what the song is about, because the music feels desolate, but also raging is not the right word, but there's a foreboding in it that it feels like something is about ready to crack or blow in the song.
Yeah.
This is probably, it's not the most melodic. It would not be good as a first single, but it is the song I return to the most on this album.
Yeah. Beautifully said.
I agree with you, Tim, 100%. I think maybe I take a little bit more of a, maybe Tweedy is writing this in the first person. And again, to go back to, like, you know, he's dealing with a lot of existential tension on this album, as we've said. But I think he's kind of reflecting on his own mortality and his own legacy as the front man of Wilco. You know, this line, I've always been afraid to sing. That's a little thing. Somehow that's all I do. Strange as that seems, I've outlived my dreams.
I've always been afraid to sing. Oh, that's a little thing.
then at the end, I'm a kid that never grows. And then he says, is it too true for me to know? Oh no, am I gone before I go? I don't know. It seems like he's reflecting on, and maybe to be too literal, like his dreams as a musician, and maybe asking himself, when do I hang up my hat and call it quits? Or will people decide that for me? Am I gone? Do I make that decision for myself, or do the fans, do people listening to Wilco decide
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I actually love that interpretation, I have to say, Morgan, because it reminds me of something, I'll mangle the joke, but talking about two different bands a long time ago, this writer wrote, you know, Gone But Not Forgotten. And it was a band that was no longer around because like the front man had died or whatever. And then he said, Forgotten But Not Gone. And it was a band that was around, but it was totally irrelevant. And I think it makes me think of what you're talking about. The idea of being forgotten but not actually gone as an artist is probably a terrible thing. And I actually love that interpretation of the idea of being in an airport and just thinking, if he's traveling, if he's touring, if that's what's going on, like, what is this all for? What is this about? Why am I, you know?
Right.
I that's a very interesting. I had not thought of that, but that's a really interesting interpretation.
Yeah, the airport imagery, for some reason I just went to like, oh, they're on tour and he's maybe had these thoughts and wrote them. I don't know.
Yeah,
it almost seems like a diary entry or like a poem he wrote like one night on tour.
Yeah,
I agree with you, Tim, that it doesn't sound like Wilco, but I think there are some Sky Blue Sky guitar tones in here that are a little familiar.
Yeah.
I wrote here around like the 3 minute mark, the arpeggiated guitars kind of remind me of Radiohead's Moon-Shaped Pool in that like melancholy tone.
So glad you brought Moon-Shaped Pool, which is one of the things I wanted to add in terms of just this album in general, because I never liked, and I think we talked about it last time, I never liked when people called Wilco the American Radiohead. That was kind of an insult to both of them, frankly. But I did think about Moon-Shaped Pool a lot while hearing this album, because I am a huge Moon-Shaped Pool album fan. I'm a big fan of the album. I think it's one of the best things they've done in a long time. And I had forgotten it, and I'm glad you brought it up in the context of this, because they are both spiritually exhausted albums. They're very, very pretty, but spiritually exhausted. Mm. And so I'm glad you brought that up.
I love that.
Yeah. I love when the song just kind of blooms in this moment, the guitars kind of take off and like, I don't know, again, like to my point about not knowing who's playing what on what song necessarily on this album, I'm going to assume this is Nels. And I wanted more moments across Cousin like this moment. We all know Nels Klein is an amazing gifted guitarist, and he's been so subdued on the last few Wilco albums, and I wanted him to let loose a little bit, and this is kind of like the one moment we get of that on Cousin. So that part that may be one of my, if not my favorite moment on this album, one of my top moments,
to be honest. This almost made my top three. I think the first time I listened through the album, this one, as well as Bowl in a Pudding, might have been ones that I'm like, oh, this is top three. I absolutely love the intro. And I've got a video pulled up of them playing this at Kane's Ballroom. We might have to put this in the show notes. But when the band comes in on those opening notes, it is so cool to watch what Nels Klein is doing. He's like holding the string and It just gives me chills, like the power that they bring in from the intro. I think it changed for me, this song, going from top three to not top three. I think as I sat with it longer, I realized it sounds a lot like Suki Ray by Tweety.
Right.
Which is the band Jeff had with his son. I adore that album. Let me be clear. I adore that album. I think it is incredibly moody. I think it's better than a lot of Wilco albums, to be honest. And this song, it sounds like it could have been home on Suki Rae. So I think if I think about it in that context, there's songs on Suki Rae that I think I like better than Pittsburgh, but that doesn't, I don't know if it needs to be compared. Apparently, this is an old song. I just came across a Substack posting that Jeff had made in August 2021, where it's a demo of this song. And he said, it's already 5 years old.
Oh, wow.
So it was intended to be on Ode to Joy, which I think it could have fit there. I think I like it better here. I think it stands out more than if it had been on Ode to Joy. I like what Scott Baer of the Associated Press said about this song. He said, the soundscape is so thick, it feels like an oral impressionistic painting with layer upon layer of music melded together to create a sonic image. Yes. And this song, I think it works. I can hear the stripped down version of like Jeff and the guitar, but then what the band contributes, it just ends up being so much better than merely the sum of its parts. Yeah, I don't have a lot more to add than what y'all have already said. It's a great song. I think it's an example of the band just being incredibly in sync with each other. Jeff has said, like, in the band, they can communicate with each other with their instruments almost more than words sometimes. And this is a song that comes to mind where I'm like, y'all are dialed in. It's magic.
They teased this song on their Instagram account, I think, leading up to Cousin. And I thought it was going to be the album opener because the way it kind of like explodes. I still think it could work as a first track, but yeah, I think this may be my favorite song on the whole album. Okay, track 9, coming into the last two songs here. We got Soldier Child. Let's give that a listen.
Tim, you had asked earlier about what songs are ones that we least like. This is probably my least favorite song on the album. I don't know. It's not a bad song. I just have a few notes on it. Apparently, Kate Laban really changed the direction of this song. It was originally intended to be big and echoey, quote unquote, in a Phil Spector kind of way. And then she brought it into a... this is Spin Magazine, quote, a rye strummy number with 70s Southern California overtones. Yeah, I hear that. I will say it's really cool. This is a Jeff Tweedy solo. And I don't know about y'all, but like the first time I heard it, I'm like, I don't think that's Nils. That sounds like Tweedy. So it's cool that he has his own guitar solo sound. he apparently nailed this on his first take too, so that's pretty cool.
It's not one of my least favorites, but it's more on the bottom if we're ranking all these songs. A Wilco song is never not melodic and pretty. Like, it's sort of that's like the baseline. But I just find myself, again, kind of lyrically not as interested in this. In terms of love songs, I don't think it's nearly as transporting or challenging or interesting or evocative. And even the Fighting Like a Child Soldier doesn't even feel that poetic or captivating as a way to talk about, because again, it's two people at a dinner table or a table of some kind talking about never being this tired. And I just found it to be a lesser Wilco song. The songs that are my top three are just much more interesting and challenging and kind of stick to my ear. This one is merely melodic and pretty and catchy.
Totally.
Yeah. I wrote down, this kind of sounds like it could be maybe a B-side from Cruel Country.
I was just thinking the same thing. It's so funny. Yeah.
Yeah. It just sounds out of place on this album. I don't know. As I re-listen to Cousin, Soldier Child is catchy when you're listening to it, but then somehow I forget about it like right away.
That's how I feel about it too. It's just not as memorable. It does not show them going in interesting new directions. Just speaking for my top three, those are songs that feel like they're going in new directions. This feels like a perfectly good Wilco song, which I think has been sometimes the problem with recent Wilco albums. Perfectly good Wilco songs, but nothing that really surprised you.
All right. Well, that was Soldier Child. That was our quickest one yet. All right. Here we go with the last track on Cousin. This is Meant to Be. So Meant to Be rounds out my top three favorites on Cousin. I don't think it necessarily fits. We were just saying how Soldier Child doesn't sound like it belongs on this album. I don't know if Meant to Be necessarily sounds like it belongs as well, but it's got like a triumphant, like road tripping, sunsetting, end of a film vibe that I'm a sucker for. So I love this song the first time I heard it. And I think it may be like the most hopeful song on the whole album. Wilco always has to have a little bit of optimism. And I think this is where we get some optimism on Cousin.
I'm about to change that opinion.
Go for it. Yeah.
With some background. So Pandora Takeover, again, this is another song that Jeff introduced. I had no idea. He said this song is about how powerful young heartaches can be, first loves. Mm. And how indelible pain can be from their inevitable demise in most cases. So as I hear that song, it feels like a desperate, you know, kind of naive lover saying like, wait, we're always going to be together. Yeah. So to me, it's actually kind of a tragic song in light of that information.
Well, that's interesting. So that's from the mouth of the songwriter himself.
From the horse's mouth.
Yeah. So I think this is kind of interesting though, because I think we've mentioned this before, is a songwriter could have one way they intended folks to interpret a song, but then the listeners will bring their own interpretation. The line, I still believe you're the only one, our love is meant to be, it is to me. And then again, to the theme of facing mortality and realizing what's more important to him as he gets older, Tweety sings, each day is longer than the one before, fewer left, less and less, I need you more. Maybe this isn't necessarily an autobiographical song, but to me, I read that as he's singing this to Susie, and he's realizing, like, I couldn't be where I am without you, and our love is meant to be.
Mm.
And yeah, I mean, it sounds happy to me. It sounds like the conclusion to Cousin, but the conclusion to maybe the wrestling of a relationship and whether things are truly meant to be or not.
Morgan, that was entirely my interpretation. I'm very interested to hear what Lance, what you said, though, in terms of what Jeff Tweedy thinks about, because I almost down the line, what Morgan said was, I sort of assumed it was as well. Like this thing of, it's the resolution of the conflict in the album of this relationship, and that, you know, it is to me, our love is meant to be, and maybe it's not to the other person, but it's a final declaration that, darn it, I'm going to make this work one way or the other. That being said, to put perfect bookends on this album discussion, I broke Lance's heart at the beginning by saying that that was one of my least favorite songs, and those in his top three. Morgan, this is also one of my least favorite songs on the album because I find it musically the least interesting. I find it and the idea that Jeff Tweedy means this to have like this like edge to it, which is like it's naive young love, is interesting. That being said, the blast of optimism, both in the lyrics and the music, just don't feel as interesting or compelling. I would almost say it's slightly more perfunctory in terms of, again, because my interpretation was a happy ending song, it almost feels like we need to have this at the end, so let's write it, where I didn't feel it as strongly as the songs that are much more emotionally complicated. Lance has complicated that by mentioning what Jeff Tweedy said, so I will now have to think about that. I was actually rereading the lyrics as Lance was saying that. But I still feel like you do, Morgan, that those last lines about every day gets longer than the last, I feel like people, when they get older, say that the days get shorter, not longer. But I did feel the same way, that it's about this idea, but maybe I was bringing my own interpretation into stuff that's actually not there. All of that being said, what is funny for me about the album Cousin are that my least favorite tracks are the first one and the last one. They're actually my least favorites on it. It's actually the middle eight that I prefer the best. And to be truthful, Child Soldier is also my least favorite. So it's actually 2 through 8 that are the ones I probably most respond to on this album.
Huh. That's interesting. Because it seemed like on social media and whatnot, this seems like one that people are really enjoying. Maybe because it sounds pretty different for Wilco. And I would say, I'm going to plug this article again. Like, you really should go read the Pace Magazine article. But what I like about what Jeff is doing here, or the band is doing, he said in that article, he said, I want to be able to do everything. Like, I want to be able to, I've never sound like Echo and the Bunnymen before, or The Cure. And I feel like this is him, like, kind of going into like an 80s vibe, which I've never heard Wilco sound like this before.
The Spin article that you've been referencing a lot, Lance, they compare this to ABBA, which is funny. We just gave ABBA a shout out in the last episode as well.
Thank you for reminding me about that Spin reference to ABBA. I don't hear that.
Yeah, I don't hear that either. But to your point, Tim, I think this song kind of sounds like a song I've heard before. You know, it has a familiar melody, maybe, but I think at the end of the day, I'm a sucker for, yeah, that like driving into the sunset tone.
And now you know the awful truth. It's actually not.
And now I'm just realize I'm dead wrong, which is, you know, hasn't happened before.
These darn songwriters with their own ideas about their songs. Yeah, right. They're pesky and they need to be stopped immediately.
Get them out of here.
All right. Well, do we have time to just kind of go around, give our final overall thoughts on Cousin? Maybe we can rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best, 1 being the worst. Do we want to go around the table?
I'll go first. You know, I give it an 8 out of 10. This is an album where I feel like I don't fully get it yet. And I feel like I still have to like wrestle with it and absorb it. And I love art that is an acquired taste. And I do think the more that I sit with it, the more I see it live, which I will get to see in a week from now, I think that I'm going to develop different feelings about it. I think my feelings on the songs are going to change. And so it just feels like the type of album. It's obviously it's by my favorite band, so I'm going to hear it a lot, but I will be returning to this thing, and I think it'll hold up for repeated listenings. It has held up already. So
that's great. All right, I can go next, Tim. We'll leave the guest of honor with the final word here. The term art pop was thrown around a lot, and so that came with it some expectations. So is it this art pop album that we were promised? Maybe not. And I think that loose description kind of set some false expectations to begin with. But to use the term experimental again, it is Wilco leaning more into an experimental side. And I just kind of wish they had explored that a little bit more and pushed those boundaries a little bit, like we saw with Sunlight Ends in Pittsburgh in particular. I think another collaboration with Kate LeBond would be interesting to see like how much further she could push them. But I think that's what makes Wilco so great is their willingness to try new sounds and not box them into one defining genre. So I will definitely be returning to Cousin more than Cruel Country and maybe perhaps any other Wilco album since Star Wars. But ultimately, I'd probably land it at around a 6.5 out of 10.
I like Kate LeBond's most recent album. I did not like her cover of Company in My Back. It felt too fussy in a way. And so I didn't go into this either super excited or super concerned. And I don't feel like it feels so different. It's not like St. Vincent, who I like a lot, going in and doing her thing with Sleater-Kinney, where it definitely felt like, oh, wow, you can hear the St. Vincent influence on this. It's not like that with Cousin. I think it is probably their best album. I'll need more time on this. I think it's probably their best album since the Schmilko Star Wars period. Ode to Joy and Cruel Country I like fine, but I don't think they're as strong. I think this may end up being my favorite of their albums since Whole Love, but check back with me on that later. I'm glad A Moon-Shaped Pool came up because I wanted to mention it and I forgot. What they have in common is it's older artists who have kind of done everything already, kind of digging in to a feeling and a sound that's moody and not very rocking, but works. I think it ultimately kind of works. Yeah. I don't think the bookends are very strong on this album, but the inside of it is pretty darn good. I would give it a 7.5.
Well, there you go. We did it, guys. We talked about Cousin. We made it through. This may be our longest episode yet, but I think it was warranted.
Just think if we had talked about Cruel Country. This would have been like a 6-hour podcast. I mean, my God.
Yeah, that would be like a 4-parter. Yeah.
That's next time, Tim.
Don't make me have to do Cruel Country Trek. But I like that album fine, but that anyway, it's fine. But that's a lot of songs on that album. Yes, yeah.
A band as prolific as Wilco, I'm sure we'll be talking to you again soon, Tim. But thank you so much for coming back on the podcast and giving your insight into this. It was super fun to just pull this album apart with you.
And for so much time, Tim. I mean, seriously, thank you so much.
Yeah, I mean, this is the stuff, and I thank you guys so much for having me on. When people sometimes will say to me, so you're a critic, you just like pick apart stuff? And this conversation was truly one of those examples of like, this is the type of criticism I like, which is not talking about things that you don't like, but it's so much more than just like tearing things apart. It's really kind of digging in. Yeah. And I've always felt like the digging in is the love. That's the thing where you're like talking about stuff. And I really loved our conversation about different themes that we interpreted and crazy interpretations we had, maybe right or wrong about songs. And that's the fun of like talking about an album like Cousin. So thank you so much, guys, for having me on. This has been such a blast. I can't wait to re-listen to the album and re-listen to this podcast down the road and see how right or wrong we were about some of these songs.
Well, I've already been proven wrong once on this recording, so I'm sure there'll be other examples of that. Tim, thanks again so much, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
It'll be my pleasure. Thank you, guys.